Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18 plus, begambleaware.org, T's and C's apply.
And welcome to Premier League All Access with me, Sam Matterface, and alongside me, as always, is TalkSport's chief football correspondent, Alex Crook, and the former England defender, Mickey Gray, as we look back on another dramatic weekend of Premier League and FA Cup action as well. So here's what's coming up.
That is still the biggest game. Liverpool against Manchester United is the biggest game, bar none.
Imagine having a ticket for that game and turning it down. Do you ever think of doing that?
2-1 down at half time. I said to the missus, this is not working. I'm going to change my top. All right. So, doing my bit for the team.
Does he go with England? Absolutely goes with England. But where do you play him?
Every professional I've spoken to says, ball boys, fair game. Every professional I've spoken to says, ball boys, fair game. They get involved in it.
I think the camp's split now, Sam. I really do. I think it's 50-50 of supporters that want to keep him there and supporters that wouldn't be fussed if he had to walk away from the club.
And only one place to start, Manchester United 4, Liverpool 3, after extra time. One of the great FA Cup ties, one of the great FA Cup quarterfinals of recent history. Imagine, Mickey, imagine having a ticket for that game and turning it down. Could you ever think of doing that?
Oh, I can hear some giggles in the background, so I believe somebody has, but my goodness, what a game. Didn't expect it, I've got to tell you, but from start to finish, you just... It had a bit of everything. Absolutely loved it.
It certainly did. Now, I'm going to be completely honest here. Obviously, I have no skin in the game. I don't care who wins that match, but I was drained afterwards. I was like, literally, it took me about an hour to sort of get the adrenaline out of me. And then once it did, it just dropped and I was dead afterwards because it was just an absolutely unbelievable roller coaster of a game, wasn't it? I mean, Crook, from a Manchester United point of view, obviously, for Liverpool, there's another narrative. We'll get to that in just a second. But from a Manchester United point of view, what did it feel like watching that?
Oh, crikey. First and foremost, I believe I did the right thing turning down the ticket because had I have turned up, it would have been the inevitable heavy away victory. So I actually did my bit for the team by not being there. All right?
Let's get that. It's down to you.
Let's get that out of the way.
Forget Ahmad. Forget Rashford. Forget Garnacho. It's all down to you and you turning down the ticket.
And not just that, actually. At half time, I actually changed my shirt into the one that you can see now that I'm wearing on YouTube, a bit of a 1980s number. I had a Cantona 7 shirt on for the first half.
Of course.
2-1 down at half time. I said to the missus, this is not working. I'm going to change my top. All right. So, again, doing my bit for the team. And then I nearly came a cropper. When Rashford equalised, I jumped out of my seat in celebration, and not for the first time in recent weeks. I fell over, I lost my footing, I slipped on the floor and crashed into a coffee table. There was a bottle on the coffee table that landed only a couple of inches from my head. So that could have been quite a nasty end to my afternoon, but in the end it turned out all right. It was emotional. It was a roller coaster.
It was indeed a roller coaster. And, you know, some of us came off that gantry having thought, wow, I've witnessed something absolutely amazing. Opened their phone and saw a half-naked picture of Alex Crook. I mean, talk about top off your afternoon. Look, let's focus on the actual game itself. I mean, it was a brilliant atmosphere inside Old Trafford. There were moments where it felt very hushed. And those moments were usually in the second half, I would say, when Liverpool really took a grip of the game. They dominated possession. They should have made that dominance count, shouldn't they, Mickey? And they didn't.
Yeah. And you think about the opportunities that they had as well, because when United, well, on two occasions, wasn't it really, when they were chasing the game, they left themselves so vulnerable and so open that you just expect in Liverpool, because of the form that they've been in as well, just to basically wipe the floor with Man United. But I think there was resilience there from Man United. I don't think it was a polished performance by any stretch of the imagination. But I think even Jurgen Klopp felt confident. I mean, you look at some of the substitutions that he made, you know, top players going off and younger players coming on. I know he's done that over the last few weeks, but they never did it. Man United hung on in there. I think the crowd stayed with them, which I think was a big bonus for them. And players that haven't really been playing well, i.e. Anthony getting himself on the score sheet. You know, there's a story in that itself. Marcus Rashford, the two chances he missed before he actually put the ball in the back of the net. And then I don't think probably anybody was expecting the fourth goal when that came as well. But from Amad Diallo, I mean, he's not played many minutes for Man United. I know him from Sunderland last season. But it was just incredible. And I don't want to bring up a sour grape here, but celebrating that late on in a game like that, and takes his shirt off and he gets a red card. Do me a favour. It was ridiculous. That rule has got to change.
I was thinking about Mike Dean in 2012 when he didn't send off Aguero because he felt that the moment sort of warranted the celebration. And I thought, come on, you know, at that stage, you know, maybe on this occasion you turn a blind eye to it. It means actually he misses the next Premier League game, not the semi-final, thankfully. But this game hinged on a couple of things. I thought, first of all, I think Erik ten Hag, and he gets a lot of stick, he was so brave. I mean, it was like he literally went all in. It was the equivalent of playing poker at the high stakes table and putting all of your chips in and going, I think I can pull this off with not a great hand, but an okay hand. And at one stage, it was Fernandez, Maguire as the two centre-halves, Dalot at right back, and I think Garnacho was playing left back. It was utterly crazy. It was utterly crazy, but it worked. And I think he deserves credit for pulling it off in those circumstances because he knew this was an all or nothing game. Does this save their season, Crook?
Well, it extends it. And you have to say the draw's been very favourable as well, with the greatest respect in the world to Coventry. Manchester United should be coming through a semi-final against Coventry, so therefore they should have an FA Cup final to look forward to, potentially a repeat of last season and another Manchester derby. But it might just give them a little lightning rod when it comes to Premier League as well, because it's been a good weekend in the Premier League without actually kicking a ball, with Tottenham getting well beaten and Villa dropping points. Yeah. I said in the podcast last week that they're not going to finish in the top five. I probably maintain that. But you wonder, could this be a turning point? I think it could certainly be a turning point for Erik ten Hag because of the bold changes that he made. And I think there were some exceptional performances. There was a lot of frustration at times. I thought both the goals Liverpool scored in the first half were avoidable. Rashford not tracking Quansah, jogging back, played a big part in that goal. Bruno Fernandes with his histrionics going down, trying to win a free kick rather than actually trying to win the ball and stop a Liverpool attack, I think was a big factor in the second goal.
It all seems such a long time ago now, though, doesn't it? I mean, that those two incidents feel like about 4 days ago.
Yeah, but that really epitomises where United are at the moment. Yeah. And then you look at the changes that he did make. I was tweeting a few WhatsApp groups during the game saying, who have they got to come off the bench, really? You know, the squad looks still really light considering the amount of money that's been spent on it. And I'm not a massive Ahmed fan. I don't necessarily believe the hype. I don't think so far he's looked like a £35 million player. But you know, the turning point with his performance today wasn't the goal he scored, and he took it really well, although maybe the keeper should have done better. There was an incident before that when Liverpool were breaking away, as they seemed to on a few occasions, 5-2, 5-3, and he was the United player busting it up to get back and make a really important challenge. And I think that probably got United over the line in the end. I think ultimately it probably meant more to United than it did to Liverpool.
And that's the key thing, isn't it? I mean, Liverpool, I think also, you've got to, Jurgen Klopp mentioned it in the build-up to the game, and I mentioned it during the commentary, the amount of games that they've played in comparison to Manchester United in 2024, completely different. The schedule over the last 16, 17 days, they've had a lot more games, and you could sort of see that maybe taking its toll, especially as we went into the slugfest of extra time, which, again, was just compelling watch. I mean, we could, and Roy Keane said this after the game, we could spend all night analysing this match and we would still not make too much sense of it, because it was just a brilliant rollercoaster football match, a game that sort of had its own sort of life and it just took place, and we should just appreciate it because you don't get to see that many games of that stature, of that nature, with those two teams, of that sort of rivalry. So, look, fantastic. Congratulations. Did it turn, though, and I believe it did, on the moment where Liverpool, in the second half, Mickey, went through 5-2 and didn't score? At that point, it would have been 3-1. It would have been over.
Yeah, well, I think even before then, Sam, it should have been over. You think about some of the opportunities and some of the positions that Liverpool got in. Because in that second half, they dominated. Let's not shy away from that.
Oh, God,
they dominated until Man United got the equalising goal very late on. Well, I think what's happened in that game is I think it's rubber stamped to everybody. That is still the biggest game. I know it was an FA Cup game, but Liverpool against Manchester United is the biggest game, bar none. Whether Jurgen Klopp got his tactics wrong himself, I know he made a lot of changes. Erik ten Hag had to make a lot of changes as well. But I just thought the atmosphere in that ground today, having 9,000 Liverpool supporters, was just electric. I've not heard it like that. And Crookie will probably be the same as well. And you, Sam, I've not heard that stadium like that for a long, long time. And there's obviously reasons behind that, because they've not played well enough. But I take on board what you said. I take on board what Crookie said as well. I think moving forward for Erik ten Hag, let's not forget, if he'd have lost that game, a lot of people would have been talking about, is this his last big game in charge of
Absolutely.
Manchester United? Yeah, but he needed to win that. And he's still got something to hang on to now. They might, it's a might at the moment, they might have two visits to Wembley, the semi-final and the final. They might get silverware at the end of the season. As I think was Crookie mentioned before there as well, there's still a little shout of Champions League, whether it happens or not. But their season is still alive.
Yeah, and it was certainly the case that when I came off the gantry and walked into the little holding area that we've got, and the draw was taking place, and then I looked up the scoreline at West Ham Aston Villa, and I thought to myself, hold on a second, not only are Manchester United going to go forward in the FA Cup, they're also going to go and nick fifth place, and that's going to be enough for a Champions League place. It just seems to all be falling for them. They sometimes get a little bit of luck like that, but I do think that maybe we're taking for granted the fact that they're going to come through a semi-final against the brilliant Coventry City team, who did so superbly on the Saturday lunchtime. Mark Robbins facing his former club. He saved Fergie. Remember that. He may save Erik ten Hag. You know, it might be the same narrative, and he might be the same guy involved. It could be Erik ten Hag who goes on to be an iconic Manchester United manager, and it might be Mark Robbins that helps him do it. Coventry did beat Manchester United, by the way, on their way to winning the FA Cup in 1987. So again, Crook, don't get too excited yet. I do like your blue shirt, though. It looks very fetching on you. Chelsea 4, Leicester 2, also on Sunday. Chelsea were dreadful. Let's just have it right. I mean, let's be completely honest. They got themselves easily into a two-goal lead, probably too easily, and then they absolutely capitulated. There was a moment when they were walking around Stamford Bridge, allowing themselves to be attacked on. What on earth they were doing, I don't know. But of course, as a result of that, Leicester got back to 2-2, and it was absolute panic. And then all of a sudden, they went up the other end and just about got over the line. I mean, the Madueke goal was a good goal to finish it off at 4-2. But they missed chance after chance after chance. The finishing was terrible. I mean, I did, in the end, feel sorry for Raheem Sterling because, I mean, I think sort of almost that free kick that he took summed up his entire performance. It was just not where he would want to be, I don't think.
I mean, you know, when you get a bit of criticism from stands, anybody can take that. You know, but the penalty, when you think about his record, I think he scored 2 in 7. Is that right? So I admire his bravery for stepping up to take the penalty. But, you know, the free kick, you know, would you pass that on to Cole Palmer? I see the good things that Raheem Sterling done in the game. I think he set, was it the first or the second goal? I can't remember now. But I don't know where all the criticism comes from. I know he's not being the same player he was when he was at City and maybe, I suppose, Liverpool as well. But Raheem Sterling in your starting 11, when you see his name on the team sheet you're playing against him, you know, as a fullback or a centre-half, wherever you're playing, you know you're in for a tough game. I think he comes in for a bit of stick, I've got to be honest with you. Yes, he doesn't perform week in, week out like he used to, but I think we're picking out and pinpointing the bits that went wrong in his game today. And I think it's a bit harsh. And but I agree with you. I don't think it was a great performance from Chelsea.
No, I thought Chelsea's performance was, they were fortunate to get through. And obviously Leicester made a couple of changes as well. And they lost the lead in the Championship as well this weekend to Leeds United, who beat Millwall. So it's not all as was seen there at King Power Stadium. What Chelsea have got this week is £4 million, Crook. An extra £4 million. Will that help them with it? The PSR, because Brozier isn't playing any games, right? So the deal was that he would go there, and if he didn't play, they'd have to play them £4 million. He has to start 10 games, and he now can't start 10 games because he hasn't. So Rodrigo Munoz, and he's upturned in form, 7 goals in 8 games. As a result of that, Chelsea get four million quid. So good bit of business.
Yeah, it was an odd deal, wasn't it, on deadline day when you found out the terms and conditions that actually it would cost Fulham more money if he wasn't playing and scoring goals than if he was. But I guess from Chelsea's perspective, actually, it's sensible business. And from a Fulham point of view, is it a coincidence that the man keeping out of the team has suddenly found his best form when he's got a little bit of competition up front?
Well, he's
potentially
playing.
Not.
So. That's the other thing, Crook. I mean, he's playing more often. Look, I mean, I saw him in the beginning of the season, actually, played against Tottenham Hotspur, and I thought, oh, he's got something about him, this fella. You need to give him a run of games. But they were, at the time, trying to bed Raul Jimenez in. I think they probably took too long. He then picked up an injury. It wasn't available. And then in the end, they've sort of settled on him ahead of Vinicius and ahead of Raul Jimenez, and he has delivered. He's been terrific. Back to Chelsea, though. Cole Palmer, I mean, he has to go away with England in the European Championships, doesn't he, Mickey? I mean, every time he gets the ball, he looks like the game slows down around him and he's got all the time in the world.
Yeah, and that's what you say about all the star players. I think he's been a bigger surprise to pretty much everybody watching the Premier League and everybody who's watching Chelsea this season, because I saw the ability at Man City, but I didn't see a player who was going to play regular and perform and score and assist as many goals that he has done this season. He's been breathtaking. He really has. And that little flick today just summed his season up. I mean, it was just outstanding on a plate. He's a special talent. Does he go with England? Absolutely goes with England. But where do you play him? You know, because we keep talking about Saka playing on one side, maybe Foden playing on the other. You've got Bellingham. Obviously,
he's only going to be a substitute for England, isn't he? I mean, he is only going to be a substitute at this time. He is, because he obviously doesn't command a first team place with those players you've already mentioned. But he's definitely an option off the bench.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, but I also think if you go through the years, and obviously we haven't got time to do that, you know, the sides that have won World Cups and won Euros in the knockout stages or in the group stages, the top sides, the top countries, they make a lot of changes. They get the job done in the first two games and then they can make a lot of changes. And I think that's when Gareth could be quite fortunate if things go our way, where he can make those changes, give players game time. So then when you do get to the knockout stages, everybody's fresh and then you get to the final. Because I think the final that we got to, and maybe the semis as well, I think we looked a little bit leggy. Reasons being, I don't think Gareth made enough changes. And when it came to being tactically nous, I think that's where we fell short. So there's no question about players like Cole Palmer. They can play a huge part. They might not start in the first two games, but as the tournament kind of progresses, I think they can play a huge part.
Well, it was a seesawing game at Old Trafford, and it was certainly a seesawing game at Stamford Bridge, where Chelsea went through moments where they created loads of chances, didn't score, then did score, then ended up in a situation where they gifted the impetus back to Leicester and then went on and won it anyway. But it was certainly not a seesawing game at the match that I was at on Saturday, where the pressure ramped up on Eddie Howe.
The road to Wembley will open up for either Manchester City or Newcastle United. Silva into the area, right-footed shot, takes a deflection, slip over the top of Dubravka and in.
Setting off and letting Manchester City play. It's all very well doing that in deeper areas. When they get in your penalty box, you've got to be more aggressive to the man on the ball.
Newcastle haven't reached an FA Cup semi-final since 2005. Manchester City, Premier League champions, Champions League winners and World Club champions as well. And they're on an incredible 21-game unbeaten run in all competitions. Silva, who comes in on his left foot, tries another strike. Oh, Kvaratskhelia's gone over the top of the ball. It might have been a deflection that eluded him.
Two really poor goals for Newcastle to concede.
Byrne getting up there, heads it down. It falls down towards Zizek, who strikes it. It's a brilliant Ortega save. Haaland's going to go in alone, gets to the edge of the box and shoots wide of the goal. It will mean they have lost just one of their last 59 home games here, City. No wonder people come here and expect them to win every week.
Manchester City become the first side in FA Cup history to reach six FA Cup semi-finals in a row after Bernardo Silva got a brace. I mean, both of them were slightly deflected, but this was a poor performance by Newcastle, wasn't it? They weren't really in the game. It was a bit too one-sided. And for an FA Cup quarter-final, I think those Newcastle fans who made the journey across from the northeast across to the northwest would be a little bit disappointed, Crook.
Will they be disappointed or will it live down to their expectations? I don't think anybody gave Newcastle a chance, did they, in this game, going to the Etihad, the season that they've been having, Manchester City in ominous form. I think actually 2-0, a couple of deflected goals, probably is a respectable result. Did any of us give him any chance, Mickey? Did you fancy anything other than the comfortable home win?
I don't think that it's okay to turn around and say that it was a respectable defeat. They had one shot on target in a game which, let's be clear, was a knockout match. It was a quarter final. You don't leave anything out there, do you? That's the idea of a knockout competition. You go for it right to the very end. And I don't think they had the capacity to do that. I mean, maybe their tank's emptier. I know Newcastle fans are a little bit fed up with that idea, but I think that's probably the case, isn't it?
I would say, I think, yeah, the tank's empty at the moment. I think over the last couple of weeks, I think you can start to see the stress lines under Eddie Howe's eyes, because I think for once he started to criticise his players, which we've not seen before in the past. I think it was one of them games where nobody expected them to win, but we expected them to compete. And I think that was the damning side of it, what I didn't like from the Newcastle side that I saw in front of me playing against the quality Man City side. Albeit, yes, the two goals came from deflections. But other than that, I didn't really see where Newcastle were going to break them down. I think the Isak opportunity on the volley was a good chance. Apart from that, they had maybe one or two little snips around the 18-yard box. But other than that, I think they went out of this competition with a whimper. I really do. And it always looked like Man City were going to get to that sixth semi-final, and that's the way it turned out.
I think Alex is right. I don't think we all sat here on Friday and thought that Newcastle would do it. But I did think that it being the last option for silverware, the last chance to really make a splash in the season, that they might give a bit of a better showing than that. I mean, the one shot on target, great save, by the way, from Ortega. The fact that I'm not necessarily sure that they set up the right way. I mean, Dan Burn playing at left wing back. Crook, Lewis Hall was sitting on the bench. He is a left wing back. I mean, it surely could have been slightly different. I mean, maybe he doesn't trust Lewis Hall. Maybe he thinks he's one for the future. But it did sort of raise a few questions.
It's a lot of money they're going to commit at the end of the season if he doesn't have the full trust of a manager, bearing in mind that we know that Newcastle are acting under strict financial limits already. That does seem a strange one. That transfer has been odd all the way through the season, really, because he's barely kicked a ball for Newcastle. I think he probably has done enough to trigger a permanent move, because I think it's more dependent on Newcastle's finishing position than necessarily the number of games he's played. But yeah, I mean, Dan Burn's been a brilliant signing for Newcastle. He came in at a time when they were struggling. Local boy, obviously wears his heart on his sleeve. Did well, I think, last season as a sort of makeshift left back. But if they're going to regularly compete at the top end of the table, regularly qualify for the Champions League, it's probably an area of the field that they need to improve on.
Well, I also thought Sven Botman obviously clearly is absolutely cream crackered, and he needs a rest, and he probably was being asked to do too much. He came back so quickly after his MDO injury that he got in the autumn period so fast and did so well to recover from that, that actually he looks now, and it was evident, I think, on Monday night when he spooned that clearance away for the opening goal for Chelsea, that he just needed probably taking out of the firing line. I mean, you could have slid Dan Burn across and played him as a centre-half, and then Lewis Hall as a left-back, and maybe that would have been given it a different dimension. I don't know. But it didn't work, because if you're going to go to Manchester City and defend and concede inside the first 10 minutes, you've got yourself a problem. Now, Eddie Howe said he wanted to get two strikers on the pitch because he felt that was a way of hurting them. And there were a couple of moments, a couple of skirmishes, where they almost looked as if they were going to get in. Then there was the chances they had, where if they had better quality on the ball, then that would have been an option to sort of maybe take the game to Manchester City. But that quality wasn't quite there. Obviously, we know that they haven't spent as much money as they would like to spend. But do you think that, I mean, if you speak to the locals, they say no, right? Everyone seems to believe that Eddie Howe is going to be okay and everything's going to be all right. But from a sort of wider point of view, everyone's talking about it. It's becoming a bit of chitter chatter. And I worry that someone who's not on the ground, someone who's not taking soundings from those who are going to the training ground, is going to end up making a big decision that actually they probably don't need to take, because he's done overall a very good job. Mickey?
Well, I think the camp's split now, Sam. I really do. I think it's 50-50 of supporters that want to keep him there and supporters that wouldn't be fussed if he had to walk away from the club. And they've been in the same position as a lot of clubs this season with the injuries. But I think Nick Pope being out of the starting 11 has been huge for them.
That's huge.
Yeah, absolutely huge. You could maybe bring Callum Wilson into that conversation as well. But I just wondered why Eddie Howe, when they've been set up as a four for a long time, would go to a five playing against Manchester City. You've got to go and compete with them. We know toe-to-toe they're better than Newcastle are not as good as Man City. But changing that system, as you just said there before, Dan Berger got centre-half. They've got Paul Dummett, who can play on the left-hand side. Hall, as you mentioned. I thought playing Willock in midfield didn't work for them either. Longstaff struggled. And like you said, these players have probably played too many minutes. Botman, he can't do anything about the deflected header that went into the back of the net. But look, there's a lot of managers, top quality managers there, out waiting in the wings to maybe walk through the door at Newcastle and hoping to take them to that next level. I don't know what that next level is. Maybe silverware, i.e. Jose Mourinho's one, isn't he? I mean, he's sitting waiting in the wings. But I'd like to hope that he'd get another summer window to bring in more players that he wants to bring into the club. But if they keep losing until the end of the season, there'll be murmurs and they'll get louder.
Yeah, and then the issue is here is that whilst he's playing the right game, he's saying the right things, you know, and I think there is a serious case, right, okay, for saying they've been unlucky. They've been unlucky. They've been unlucky with the draws that they've got. They've been unlucky with the injuries that have hampered them all season. They've been in an unfortunate position that they can't spend any money because of PSR, and they have been unlucky with decisions that have happened in games. The narrative would be completely different if they don't give away that chance at the end of the Chelsea game in the quarterfinals of the League Cup and ultimately go on and end up being in a League Cup final. They don't have the same sort of chatter about them if PSG didn't get that penalty at the end of their Champions League game. You know, there's big decisions that have happened in games and big moments in games that have gone against them too, plus all the injuries. So I do think there are, genuinely, and I'm not one for excuse, Crook, there are mitigating circumstances, aren't there? Or are we being too kind?
No, I think there are. And again, we alluded to it going into this weekend, that the cup draws in particular have been a killer because they've had to face top teams, it seems, at every turn. And I've got the Premier League table open in front of me. And had they not finished in the top four last season, who are those teams above them? Realistically, would we expect Newcastle to finish above or even compete with? Certainly not the top three. Aston Villa, we all fancied them to have a semi-decent season, so I don't think that's a massive surprise. It isn't for me anyway that they're above Newcastle. Tottenham, I think, are a better team than Newcastle. Manchester United should be above Newcastle in the table, despite the fact they've made bloody hard work of it. West Ham won a European trophy last season, and they've been able to bring in people like Paquetar and Kudus, who've taken the league by storm. Brighton, we give them all the plaudits for what Roberto De Zerbi has done there. So it's probably only Wolves, really. The fact Wolves are above Newcastle is a head-scratcher. I think the rest of them you can make a case for.
On a separate note, Martin Hardy from The Times is reporting that Newcastle are going to play a friendly with Spurs at the Melbourne Cricket Ground in the week leading up to the FA Cup final, which again, it's like the end of season tour thing that seems to be going on now as well, which is a bit odd, considering some of those players will be wanting to play or expecting to play in their team's European Championship squads. Wolves beaten at home by Coventry. You mentioned Wolves. Coventry scored twice in added time to turn it around to put their place in the FA Cup semi-final for the first time since 1987. What a brilliant end to the match, Mickey.
It was amazing. And what a story as well. I mean, you look at that semi-final draw now against Manchester United, Mark Robins being in charge of Coventry, which we touched on as well. But I thought Wolves obviously controlled the game, a lot of possession. And when they go in front, you think, right, OK, that's it. The Premier League side is just going to go on. But it topped and turned, didn't it, the way that the scoring went. And then you're thinking when Wolves are back on level terms, it was them who were going to go on and obviously get themselves into the semi-finals. But I thought the Ellis Sims, I mean, was it the first one? But he never really knew anything about it, did he? He just stood at the back stick and it basically hit off him and went into the back of the net. But Ike Norrie, I thought his first goal was absolutely fantastic. Left-back union here, but the run he made down the left-hand side, obviously getting himself into the box and finishing off. I think he's been really good for Wolves this season. He's got a lovely left foot. But Gary O'Neill must have been thinking himself, right, this is it, done and dusted. Rubbing his hands together because they're playing against a Championship side. People have called it a derby. It's not really a derby. There's a bit of distance between them. There's bigger derbies for Wolverhampton Wanderers, put it that way. But we've had some brilliant stories in the FA Cup this season and Coventry have just continued it on.
Yes, indeed they have. And it's important, I think, in a week where the Premier League have failed to agree a deal with the EFL, that we underscore the importance of the EFL and their roles in these competitions. And we've sort of seen that with Coventry City. And there are a lot of players that maybe end up playing in the Premier League come through that route. You are one of them. You know, you played for England on the basis that you came through the system, the pyramid. And Coventry City deserve credit for the way they performed, especially after going 2-1 down right at the end of the game. I thought that game was done and dusted once that goal goes in from Bueno. And then they got the other end and then they scored two quick goals. But here's the crucial question of the whole weekend for you. Have you ever celebrated in the face of a ball boy?
Oh, yeah. Do you know what, Sam?
Every professional I've spoken to says ball boys, fair game. Every professional I've spoken to says ball boys, fair game. They get involved in it.
Yeah, they do. Well, was it Cardiff many years ago when, was it, he used to play for, against Chelsea, I think it was, wasn't it? Yes, Swansea, yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, look, they have been involved in games. They love a little bit of a wind-up, holding onto the ball or not pretending they haven't got a ball to throw onto the pitch. But I think what Mark Robbins has done, and he said, I never get irate, and he doesn't, because I've seen him over the 7 or 8 years while he's been in charge at Coventry. I think he, you know, it was the moment, wasn't it? You think you've got the chance to get into a semi-final. He just overstepped the line a little bit. Look, he's apologised for it. He did exactly the right thing. He's even went to Gary O'Neill and he said, look, I was totally out of order. I think he apologised to the ball boy as well. And that's the end of it for me. It should have been done and dusted, but you're right. I mean, it's something he shouldn't be doing.
Listen, I'm sure that we're all being sort of, you know, he shouldn't do that, especially to the kid or whatever. But, you know, I know Crook would definitely do it. I know that for a fact. Absolutely no doubt. It's a big missed opportunity, though, isn't it, for Wolverhampton Wanderers? And I think that's one of the reasons why Gary O'Neill was so upset afterwards, Crook.
Yeah, but again, if not to make excuses, but they were without Huang, Cunha, Pedro Neto, who looks like he might now miss the rest of the season. I do wonder if his injury record is going to put off teams from paying the type of money that Wolves are going to ask for this summer. We're talking about
injury record. It's not just any injury. It's the constant hamstring problems that he keeps having.
Yeah, and he's missed an awful lot of football. I think if I was a sporting director, I'd be a little bit dubious about spending big money on a player who you can't rely upon to stay fit. But with those injuries, I think, 56% of the goals they've scored this season have come from those three players. So it was always going to be a tall order. I thought this would be a low-scoring affair on the back of that. I was wrong about that. But I think Coventry, over the balance of the piece, probably deserve their win. And you talk about the pyramid. I think we need to talk about the FA Cup, which, again, there's talk that replays are going to be ditched altogether. Some Premier League teams don't take it particularly seriously. I think it's been a brilliant weekend for the FA Cup, with what Coventry have done and what it means to them to get back to Wembley for only the second time in a FA Cup semi-final. You saw what it meant to Manchester United and their fans today. I think even Chelsea, you mentioned it in the preview podcast, the atmosphere at Stamford Bridge this season for cup games has been terrific, because basically all they've got to play for. And I think Pep Guardiola has always treated the FA Cup seriously. He did again with his team selection. So it's taken a kicking. I still think it's absolutely brilliant.
It's brilliant. And I spoke to Pep about it on Saturday, and he said to me, you know, I said, what does it tell you that you've been in the semi-finals every single season for the last 6 years? And he said, it tells me that my team is consistently brilliant, but it also tells me that I show respect for a historical competition. And I thought, you know, you're absolutely right, because it means a lot. He said, you know, we league cups, we always try, you know, but we always try, but this cup is important. And he was big on that. And I thought that was quite impressive, really. Let's go back to the Premier League, though, because it was a big weekend for one or two teams at the top and the bottom of the table.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18+, begambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
Ball inside the area for Sims for Wright. Oh, they've won it! They've won it! Coventry have won it in the 10th minute of stoppage time. That is the most extraordinary FA Cup fight back you could ever wish to see.
And Forest take the lead at Kenilworth Road. Ian Abrahams.
2-0 Forest, one. It has been coming in the last couple of minutes. Chris Wood is the man who's got the goal.
2 or 3 pace runner for Larson. Up he steps, right footed. Scores in the bottom corner. Burnley, a goal up. Brentford, a man down. And now Fofana inside the area. Tucks it round the keeper. And Burnley have a second.
It's never say die at Kenilworth Road.
Luke 1, Forest 1. Luke Berry off the bench.
How about this for a scoreline? 61 gone. It's Fulham 3, Tottenham 0.
Silva, who comes in on his left foot, tries another strike. Oh, Kaplapka's gone over the top of the ball. It might have been a deflection that eluded him. It's 2-0 to Manchester City.
Palmer to Chukwuemeka. Chelsea 4, Leicester 2.
Ahmad on the edge of the penalty area. Ahmad to score! The decisive ultimate blow. Manchester United 4, Liverpool 3 after extra time.
Tottenham Hotspur missed the chance to move into the top four. Now, let's talk a little bit about Ange Postecoglou after the game, because Crook is he's one of the very few people who isn't enamoured with Big Ange. You don't like him, do you? He's not, you don't like him. You just think you don't like the fact that he doesn't look at you when you talk to him, and you think he can be a little bit spiky in post-match interviews. And you also think, and I'm putting words in your mouth here, but I'll ask for clarification if it's not true. You also think that he's not very funny. You don't like that either, do you?
No, he reminds me a little bit of Gordon Strachan, to be honest. And I dealt with him a lot when he was in charge of Southampton. And if you watch a 10, 15-second soundbite on television, you think, oh, he's a witty character. But actually, if you're the interviewer who's having to ask these questions, and I felt really sorry for the Sky report, I think it was Emma Saunders, wasn't it? Because I thought it was a reasonable question. You know, you've got a team going for the top four, you get a heavy defeat away from home. What does this do for your aspirations of getting in the top four? It's not a difficult question to answer, and I thought he answered it facetiously. I think he was rude. And then you see it clipped up, sarcastic, witty response. I didn't think it was funny or witty. I thought it was a little bit disrespectful. And I think he is very spiky in post-match interviews. I also think we're a little bit guilty of giving him a free pass when Tottenham do get turned over, and they did get royally turned over in this game, because he's come out and made that quote after they got hammered at home by Chelsea, when again, tactically, he was all over the shop. That's what we do, mate. But you get well beaten. Surely, if you're a top level manager, you find a way to avoid such defeats when games are going against you.
It's fascinating, isn't it? Because actually, you know, here's the truth. We've spoke about this on this podcast. Someone has asked me the question a couple of times. Well, do you think they'll finish in the top four? I've always said they won't finish in the top four. The reason for that is because they are always capable of having that game. Always. They always concede goals, and they always are capable of having that match where things just don't work for them. That high line just doesn't work for them, and someone outwits them. And that's what happened at the weekend against Fulham. And fair play to Fulham, because I think they've had a very good season, by the way. And Marco Silva, and we spoke about him on the podcast, deserves a lot of credit for the way he's got that team with a limited budget. They sold their best player, their goal machine, in the summer, and they haven't replaced them properly. So fair play to him for that. But Spurs' biggest issue is, and one of the issues I think that maybe some of the fans might have with it, Mickey, is that when he came out after the game, he actually said, I don't care about top four right now. I don't care about the position. It's not about that for me. It's about the way we play. Well, that's just simply not true, is it? Because ultimately, the way you play is important, and I get the philosophy and I get it. And it might be that you think by playing that way, eventually you'll get to where you want to be. But your position in the table does matter. Your ability to get into the top four, when you've got a chance to take that, you have to take it. It is important what happens. The results are more important than the performance sometimes.
Well, I think going back to what you were saying at the beginning, Sam, let's not forget Tottenham sold their best player as well.
And scored more goals.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. But they were able to bring in reinforcements in certain positions, weren't they? And I think we all enjoyed the style of football from Ange Postecoglou. I mean, they got off to a brilliant start.
No doubt about that. It's entertaining, but it's not just about that, is it? It is about winning as well.
I hope this comes out the right way. It's not winning football, and winning, i.e. meaning Champions League football, winning silverware. It's great on the eye, but at times it's ridiculous. It's beyond belief sometimes when you watch the high line.
Why? Is it because it's too risky?
Well, it is, yeah. I mean, if you think about, if you've got Van de Ven playing at the back, you can play that system. But if you haven't got Van de Ven playing at the back, then you've got to try and sort it out. And that's when you need to have that plan B. That's when your manager and your coaches have got to look at a start side and who you're playing against. Playing away from home, if we're talking about the Fulham game, and you go, right, okay, what are they good at? Well, they're great at getting their full-backs or the wing-backs out wide, and they love getting that ball in behind a back line. If you're playing a high line and your full-backs are bombing forward, you know you've got speedy strikers, then you're in trouble. And that's a big problem. And I think that's where Ange Postecoglou maybe falls short at the moment of being a real top quality manager. And he's got to get it right. And one of the things he did say in that interview, Sam, was this club's finished in the Champions League positions before. I'm not interested in that. And that left a bit of taste in my mouth. That I thought, well, hang on a minute. You know, just because you've done it once doesn't mean you can't go and do it again. I think everybody would be absolutely buzzing at Tottenham if they were in the Champions League positions. Now that's under threat at the moment from Manchester United and obviously Aston Villa, depending if it's going to be four or five. I think they're very good on the eye, but you two guys will probably agree with it. I think there's certain times this season where they've looked vulnerable still.
Yeah, okay. We'll better move on to some of the other big games that happened in the weekend as well. Luton won, Nottingham Forest won. Rob Edwards said it was a near miracle that they got a result in that game with so many players out injured and out of position. 11 players currently injured, just 1 point from the Bournemouth and the Nottingham Forest game. I mean, when we come back to sort of the end of the season, if they are relegated, Crook, will we look back on this week as the week in which Luton's chances disappeared?
Yeah, and maybe not even just this week. I think particularly that second half against Bournemouth. And actually, I think they've done well to dust themselves down. We wonder what sort of mindset they would be in mentally after that second half collapse. They've fallen behind again. They spent a lot of the game behind, and they still managed, as they often do, to keep going till the final whistle and salvaging a point. And who knows, it could be a big point come the end of the season, because they're only three back now on Forest and Everton, four on Brentford. Obviously, we expect to find out early this week, about Nottingham Forest and their potential.
What do you reckon on
penalty.
That?
Well, I've asked the question as we've been recording this podcast. No definitive steer yet, but I think Monday is going to be a big day for Nottingham Forest. And I think the precedent is there. I do think it will be a points deduction. I don't think it will be as dramatic as what happened to Everton initially with that 10-point penalty, but it's certainly going to bring Forest right back into the conversation when it comes to that final relegation place, if they're not in it already, because even without a points penalty, they're not that far clear.
As the Premier League reaches 10 games to go, hope springs eternal, they say. Cullen floats it to the far post. Vitinho onside, took a swing, went down under pressure. Darren Bond has been sent over to the referee review point, which is over on the far side from us. He backs away from the referee review area onto the pitch, does the signal and points to the spot for a Burnley penalty.
And it's a red card.
Sergio Reguilón has also been dismissed. Two or three pace run-up for Larsson. Up he steps, right footed, scores in the bottom corner. Burnley, a goal up. Brentford, a man down. And now Fofana inside the area, tucks it round the keeper, and Burnley have a second. And they have belief that maybe the Premier League isn't going to be a one-season wonder. Baptiste with a cross, and the header is in! They've got one back. Christopher Ayer gives Brentford hope. Baptiste lobs it to the far post. It's gone in!
Away.
But the whistle's gone. The whistle has gone for a foul on Muric. Punched away by Muric. Clipped back into the box. Tony! Oh. What a save by Muric. Point blank stuff. There goes the full-time whistle. And that's the sound of a rare Burnley home win in the Premier League.
Burnley is the club with the worst home record. But even they managed to beat Brentford, Mickey. You were there on TalkSport 2 in commentary, and you said that it was a positive thing that Vincent Kompany decided to take James Trafford out of the firing line. How did Aaron Muric do?
Well, I mean, he's a heart attack waiting to happen, I have to tell you. But if you want entertainment, then you go and watch Muric in goal at Burnley. even from the first couple of minutes, I think O'Shea, who gave him the back pass, you know, you're waiting for a goalkeeper, should be in the middle of his sticks, and he stood at an angle to clear his lines, and then had a last-ditch challenge to keep it away from their goal. It was a brilliant game, loads of mistakes, some of the goals were fantastic. Obviously, the moves. I thought Burnley played really well, to be honest with you. I was quite surprised at Brentford. When they went down to 10 men, it was really difficult when Vitinho got brought down and they went down to 10 men, Brentford.
But, sending off for you?
Yes, it was a sending off for me. Reguilon, I mean, he was last man. It was a goal-scoring opportunity. Vitinho was just about to get his laces through it and about to put the ball in the back of the net. So I think the right decision was made. A red card, penalty was given. But can I bring VAR up in this conversation?
Well, it took a long time, didn't it?
Yeah, well, we were looking across at the screen where Darren Bond was going across to. And he went across and for about 3 minutes, maybe more, the screen didn't switch on. We could see exactly what was going on.
You're wrong. It's all by design. Do you not know this, Mickey? Come on. They've clarified this. The reason it took so long, because when the ref went over to the monitor, it was already checking an offside in the attacking play. Now, this sort of footage is never shown on the monitor. Then they had to wait until that check was finished, and then they looked at the VAR check on the foul. So anyone saying that the monitor was broken was completely wrong, Mickey. Now, come on.
We could all see when the screen got switched on, everybody in the stadium and all the Burnley supporters.
Come on. They've made a mistake. They're letting us know about it. Come on, it can't be. They can't have got it wrong here, surely.
Well, there was a big cheer as it came on the monitor from like, it must have been at least 10 to 15,000 people in the stadium. But it was just a brilliant game. And I think this is why Burnley are going to go down this season, Sam. So they get themselves in front, but Brentford go down to 10 men. You could see the pressure building on the Burnley players until Brentford got their equalising goal. But even before then, I'm thinking to myself, right, Vincent, bring on a holder midfield player or bring on a defender and just see the game out. Get a point because your home record is really, really poor. And then I think he brings Amdouni on, and then 7 minutes later he brings him off. Then he brings Lyle Foster on. So he's still going to win the game. And you could just see the way the game was going. You're thinking, you're going to lose this game, Vincent. You're going to lose it to 10 men. Brentford, who hadn't played well in the day. And whether it was fortune or not, you know, the Ivan Toney equalising goal at the end, I think it probably was a foul. But for entertainment from start to finish, it had absolutely everything. I loved it at the weekend. It was a brilliant game.
Yeah, I mean, Brentford will be hoping that points deduction goes against Nottingham Forest because they've lost 14 Premier League games in their last 18 matches. That is the kind of record that will get anyone the sack at any other stage of the season. I mean, it is an unbelievable record. I'm sure there's mitigating circumstances, but 14 defeats in 18, they are sliding towards that relegation zone. And they're probably only going to get away with it because of points deductions, because of the fact that the two at the bottom of the table, Sheffield United and Burnley, with all due respect, have been pretty poor over the course of the season. Let's quickly focus on West Ham and Aston Villa before we leave you. West Ham 1-1, and I think they felt as if they should have had a winning goal. Thomas Soucek up in arms in injury time because they believed they got a winning goal. They didn't get it. Villa have won 6 Premier League games since December the 17th. All of those have come against lower half sides. Are they starting to limp towards the line now, Crook? Is that a concern?
Yeah, and you wonder if the pressure of being in the box seat is beginning to take its toll. It certainly felt that way with the way that John McGinn lost his head last weekend. But I wasn't overly surprised to see this end in a draw. Obviously, both teams had big European games in midweek and games where they had to go full pelt. West Ham turning around a deficit from the first leg and Villa getting the job done against Ajax. So I think a point probably is an OK result for the two, bearing in mind Tottenham's defeat as well. But it does just tighten up slightly in terms of maybe Manchester United being able to gatecrash the top four. But with the VAR decision, again, I think the biggest gripe you'd have there is how long it took for the VAR to come to its final conclusion.
It's a bit like the Tedan Mengi one at the weekend. You know, you look at it and it seems to take an absolute age. I think the Burnley check took 5 minutes or something that Mickey was talking about. And look, I want them to get it right. I really do. But Henry Winter, actually, on the Sunday edition show on TalkSport, he said there should be a 3-minute rule. You know, if you can't sort it out in 3 minutes, it isn't clear or obvious. You know what I mean? It isn't. And I think that's probably true, isn't it? You know, the offences is there for howlers. If it's not a howler, then you've got to put a time limit on it, I'm afraid. And I think if you can't see it in 3 minutes, then it's not. I mean, offside slightly different. You've got to get those lines out and measure it and all that kind of stuff. But I think once you're determining an offence, before you decide to sort of
determine an offence. You've got to say within 3 minutes what the situation is. Anyway, that's for another day. International break time now. Good to see that you wore appropriate uniform today. Not necessarily sure that the chief football correspondent of Talksport should be wearing a Manchester United kit for a review podcast. But anyway, listen, as long as you're comfortable, that is okay by me. Mickey, thank you very much for your time.
I've got mine under here, Crookie, don't worry.
Good lad. Strength in unison.
Anyway, thank you very much for listening and watching. We appreciate it. Make sure you leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. Be gambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.